lot of experiences that have arisen and passed, and some that are just here now, and they're just turning up. And in each of those unfoldings, each of those experiences, sometimes calls for a different way of meeting. And, you know, we've had this instruction through the day, this suggestion of ways of practicing around the idea, as I understood it, of encouraging a sense of acceptance, of allowing, of beginning to make peace with our experience, to stop our reactivity and our, particularly our rejection or grabbing on in this way, and we can allow for something more peaceful, this path of peace, as it's sometimes spoken of. And it can be interesting to see, well, who's here now and what are they meeting? And are we in a place where we can start to discover, uncover, what way of relating to this experience is most supportive? Yeah, great. Yeah, sure. So, as well as finding where you want to be in the hall, and, you know, finding that spot, there's quite a few spots here. There's a spot next to me, which maybe Zoe will take. There's a few more spots around here. So if you would prefer to be up here, feel free to be here. We've got good air, friendly atmosphere, and we can also hear the music. So any of those things, you're welcome to. Yeah, and feel free to take a spot temporarily that you feel is someone else's. So it's probably already been mentioned, but it's worth just putting in as a framing to understand a little bit more of what I want to be speaking about. The way that we relate to what arises for us is very significant. Yeah. And perhaps we could say that this path of awakening, or even the path of an awakened being, will be shaping the way that they relate to what has arisen, what will arise, and also what just passed. Yeah. The way of relating to things is very suggestive of this path. If we think about this path going from being bound, both entangled, bound, tied up, and also limited, bound, to something that's unbound or boundless, the path there depends on those ways of meeting, those ways of relating, yeah, those ways of interacting. And even a path that is heading towards peacefulness, which we could say is like less and less activity in peacefulness, yeah, in the calm and the spaciousness, is actually led there by that shaping of that activity, that shaping of those ways of relating. So even that kind of opening, softening, allowing, and the dissolving of a activity. And the Buddha made this clear in a number of ways. And one of the ways that I like to remind myself, like a question that is in this quest of this path, is this: what, when I do it, will lead to my long-term well-being and happiness? What, when I do it, will lead to my long-term well-being and happiness? And it's a very alive question. It's a very poignant question. And it's a question of activity. What, when I do it? When I do it? And all activities become a question of the ethic, the meaning, the depth, the integrity that is behind that activity. I want to speak a little bit more about that. But the second way that we see this relationship thing appear is in its quite famous position, coming in at a very good second place as the second noble truth, why is there so much dukkha in my existence? And that's what the Second Noble Truth is asking. And the answer is, it's in your relationship. Yeah, it's what you're doing. This word tanha, sometimes translated as craving, I think most helpfully in English translated as demanding. Yeah. I want this. I don't want that. Yeah. I don't want that. I want this. Yeah. Or I don't want either of them. And I don't want to be me either while we're at it. Yeah. And these typical three aspects of tanha are called sensory demands. Yeah. I want this for my senses. Don't want that. Yeah. It's interesting what's going on there under the covers of that activity. Don't know if there's time for that tonight, but the other side is I want to be somebody special. Yeah. That other kind of, and I want to be seen as something special that gets involved in, I want to be a great meditator even. Yeah. Or there's that other side is I don't want to be here at all. I would rather not be. This is not my kind of moment. Give me some future moment. And I'm looking forward to, you know, the end of the day, the annihilation of sleep, you know, getting out of this circumstance into another circumstance I can try and get out of, you know. And all of those happen for us. And a lot of their problematicness is actually in that relationship. The relationship to that idea of this sensory object that feels like a problem or feels like the solution. That relationship to being a somebody somewhere for something, or that relationship we have to not being, to disappearing. Yeah. Ah, looks like I am going to talk about that. I'm not sure if I am. I think I'm not. Sorry, I'm just arguing with myself very gently. But I think it would be more focused not to at this point. The happiness that is available for us is actually changing that relationship from that demand to kindness. Changing that relationship from needing to get that, needing to get rid of that, needing to be somebody, needing not to be somebody. A lot of that solution comes through in kindness. And the first layer of kindness is just there in the mindfulness, just in the noticing, just in that holding of attention. There is kindness, yeah? You know when somebody gives you their undivided attention? That attention that was a gift given to them, it's not their attention, yeah? You don't go to the store and buy extra attention because you've used yesterday's supply already. You know, it's like, we're just gifted attention after attention after attention. And then we can direct it. Is there anything more precious than attention? What a gift. Somebody can give you their attention. So when you give your attention to something, in the most, you know, unlayered kind of way, just, you're here. What do you need? What would you like? What can I hear from you? What can I listen to? Such a gift. Such a lot of kindness there. But then with that attention and with that intention that can come through, we can really allow more and more of this. Allow you to be this way and allow you to change. Allow you to be this way and allow you to change. You don't have to stay that way. You can change, but you don't have to change. But you're allowed to. Yeah, it's a lovely quality in that allowing. But we can actually go even further than that, you know, and really kind of meet the experience like we're at the door of our being and we just swing the doors wide open, just say, come on in. Come on in. A real welcoming of this breath, a welcoming of these sounds, a welcoming of this self-view even, yeah? A welcoming of these thoughts, crazy thoughts, come on in, yeah? Many of you know Rumi's poem, The Guest House, it's like, invite them in, even if they clear you out, yeah? I think he says in the line, maybe they're clearing you out for some new delight. The way that we meet our experience radically shapes our experience. Yeah. And kindness is something that transcends. It's not human normal. Yeah. To be radically kind. It's not human normal to be radically kind to oneself. Yeah. Even if we manage one moment of self-acceptance, self-allowance, or other allowance, we should recognize that we are a radical, yeah? A radical move to do. And when we do that, kind of what actually begins to kind of radiate out from us? You know, if we remember our intentions that we were sharing or feeling into, when we bring those into being, like what else comes through us? What radiates? The kindness without expectation. In this term, expectation of anything in return. Just kindness. Yeah. Kindness without an expectation of anything in return. A compassion that arises when we meet what's painful or hard to be with. Notice that that kind of comes through us. Also delighting in what's good. Yeah. The shade on a sunny day. Come into that shade. And it's nice. The feeling of the cool. The feeling of the softness of the grass. Another breath. Funny how the body never gets bored of breathing. It's like, oh, another breath? Come on, you just had one. Oh, go on, just one more. Oh, yeah, that was a good one. Yeah, we can really delight in that at times. Other times it seems to be boring, which is interesting. Or is it boring? No, it's interesting. And also this way of relating, this kindness that knows when not to interfere. Knows when not to interfere. And so we have kindness, we have compassion, we have delighting, and we have knowing when not to interfere. And there we have something that is sometimes described as the divine abodes, the Brahma Viharas, the boundless qualities of an awakened heart and mind. Yeah. The realms of the gods. To be unbound in so many ways. Now, you may not have noticed it, but in a way, we're walking in the footsteps of the Buddha. Yeah. By practicing these practices, we're trying to awaken something radically different. And at times it feels, yeah, I'm on the path. And at times it just feels like, where's the path? I'm just struggling here. But, you know, from a certain perspective, it looks beautiful. And probably no one else here was criticizing us in the similar way that we were today. Yeah. I'm very impressed with your practice, your presence, your dedication, your devotion to all of this. And sometimes I think that we can even see what others are radiating easier than we can see it for ourselves. And we're all radiating. We're all radiant, actually. In certain ways, yeah. You know, there's this lovely story. It's probably true. I was going to say maybe it wasn't, but it's probably true. Like, there's a story of somebody like seeing the Buddha soon after their awakening, like walking down a road. You heard this one, you know? And it's like, it's why do birds suddenly appear? And it's walking there, and the flowers are blossoming out of their footsteps. The air is purifying as they move through. Dust is settling, you know. Thoughts are just emptying out of people's minds. Hands are ending up holding onto other hands. And there's and someone stops and says, who are you? Are you a celestial being? You know, are you a divine God come down to earth? And the Buddha goes, no. So are you an illusionist? Are you some kind of magic that you're doing? No. Oh, so are you human? No. What are you? And the Buddha says, I'm awake. I'm awake. I'm awake. In a sense that something is waking up. Something's waking up. And so what I love about this story is not all the funny bits, is actually that the Buddha was walking about. Walking about. Just like everybody else at that time. But choosing to walk and to share what they understood and create good vibrations as they were doing it. But very much a path of compassion, a path of ethics. By ethical means, barefoot walking, asking, can you give me something to eat? Yeah. Wearing simple clothes, living a simple life. These ethical foundations were not just for show. There's something really important about minimizing harm and the happiness that it brings. And so there's such an interesting cycle here in these teachings. So you know the everybody's favorite fourth noble truth, the whole life path that leads to the ending of dukkha, leads to the ending of, we could say, bad relationships with experience, yeah, unhelpful relationships with experience. And when we think about this whole life path, we might think about the samadhi, the well-being, the grooving into deep, subtle, spacious states of refined heart, mind, psychedelic, trippy kinds of stuff. It's like, yeah, give me some of that stuff. And why not? It's great. Or the other side, it's that precision, that investigation, that understanding, that wisdom, that seeing through, yeah. Understanding the knowledge, that elusive knowledge. Now I understand. And again, yeah, why not? Why not? But isn't the best bit? Isn't the best bit the ethics? Yeah. That being really well behaved, that, you know, always being nice, being very soft and gentle, encouraging. But obviously it is the best bit. Yeah, it's the bit that sets up the whole path. And then what would all of that wisdom and samadhi be for? All that well-being in here? What would it be for if it doesn't reveal itself into the world in which we live? If it doesn't improve the conditions for this being and for all beings? At its root, this path is ethical. Yeah. It's sila, it's care. And what we're doing is only possible because of the care that we take about where we place attention, how we place attention, and the care that we give. We radiate out, and all the care that we receive, the whole structure of this retreat is dependent on other people caring for us. Yeah. None of this can happen without that. This is a path of care. And it is, in many ways, the most beautiful part of the whole path. if we don't care, nothing follows. If we don't care, nothing follows. And if we care, nothing can stop us. There's a lovely sutta. I really recommend reading it in the Vajrayana Nikaya. The Shorter Gosinga Sala Tree Discourse. You'll remember that. It's MN31. And it has a nice counter to "Why do birds suddenly appear?" The Buddha's coming to visit some of his students, disciples, however you say it, yeah, who are practicing in this forest. And this is a quote. "And the forest keeper saw the Blessed One coming in the distance and said, 'Recluse, do not enter this forest. There are three sons of clansmen abiding here, seeking their own good. Do not inconvenience them.'" And I just love this idea. You know, on the one hand, we have this radiant being, all kinds of stuff, you know, popping out, exploding around, and then, like, this guy's like, "Who the hell are you coming in here? Come on, move along, move along." It's like, I don't know, his radiance had a bad day, or the forest keeper didn't have good eyesight. But it's what's really delightful about this is actually how the meeting starts. So obviously the misunderstanding is resolved very quickly in the sutta. It doesn't end there. And they get to meet each other. And there's this really nice moment where, you know, they set up a nice situation for the Buddha. You know, it's obviously, again, walked barefoot, probably traveled a great distance on his alms food. You know, they get a pot of water so that he can wash his feet. You know, they don't wash his feet for him. I like that. Just get him with water, washes his feet, give him a comfy spot in the shade, and they sit down together. And then his first words seem to be, "I hope you're all keeping well, Anuradhas. I hope you're all comfortable. I hope you're not having any trouble getting alms food." Actually, what a beautiful way to start off. You know, something like, what's going on in your practice? Have you gotten enlightened yet? You know, but it builds, and it's like, yeah, thank you. We're keeping well, Blessed One. And he's like, "I hope you're all living in concord with mutual appreciation, without disputing, blending like milk and water, viewing each other with kindly eyes." And to which they say, "Yeah, surely we are, yes. But, Anuradha, how do you live thus?" "And Venerable Sir, as to that, I think thus. It is a gain for me. It is a great gain for me that I am living with such companions in the holy life." It's such a gain for us, isn't it? So much harder on our own. And then they say, "I maintain bodily acts of loving kindness towards those venerable ones, both openly and privately. I maintain verbal acts of loving kindness towards them, both openly and privately. I maintain mental acts of loving kindness towards them, both openly and privately." "And I consider, why should I not set aside what I wish to do and do what these venerable ones wish to do? And then I set aside what I wish to do and do what these venerable ones wish to do. We are different in body, Venerable Sir, but one in mind, one in heart." And then this sutta goes into this part where they describe, you know, how they fill up each other's water jugs in the toilets and all the other kind of little service that they do, which again feels like the mundane parts of this retreat. But aren't they some of the most important parts? The service, the way we show up, the way we help each other, the way we do these things. And we often undervalue that part of our meditation. So I had a really good sitting, but I skipped cleaning my toilet. Oh, that doesn't sound so good. I had a really bad sitting, that I clean my toilet with love. Good. Very good. Good retreat you're having. Yeah? But then the conversation naturally starts to evolve into talking about entering and remaining in superhuman refined states of well-being. Yeah? Suddenly, okay, so, you know, what have you been up to? It's like, well, we've been hanging out in this incredibly cool place. And it's like, well, that is an incredibly cool place. Is there a more cool place that you could tell me about? And it's like, well, there is another cool place that I've been to, and it's even cooler than that. And he's like, yeah, that is a pretty cool place. Is there anything cooler than that? And it's like, yeah, there's a cooler place that we go to, and it's this cool place. It's like, yeah, that is a very cool place. Is there anywhere you go? And they said, I go to this cool place, but I don't see a cooler place than that. And the Buddha says, you're right, there is no cooler place than that. And it's like, but it started off with cleaning the toilet. And it's not disconnected. There wasn't like a big kind of, well, and anyway, it was, okay, this is how it goes. You lived in harmony. You didn't put yourself at the front. You cared. And this experience started to open up for you. And we see the connection. This is a path of care. This is a path of care, fundamentally, importantly. And what are the fruits of this practice? The fruits of this practice is an increased amount of care. Yeah. That expansive, unbinding possibilities. The basis of this path is ethical. There are a lovely teacher, Lee Brazington, who's a great joy to listen to, says, first we clean up our act to steady the heart and mind, to investigate what is appearing to us as reality. And the outcome is transformational. We understand the power of cleaning up our act. Which bit? Lee? We clean up our act to steady our heart and mind, to investigate our reality. Thanks for the reminder. And so in the middle bit of that sutta, there was quite a lot about loving kindness, about metta as a practice, as a way of holding beings bodily, verbally, mentally, activity that way. And also in how we pay attention and what we pay attention to, what brings the maximum amount of kindness. Sila, ethics, and metta, kindness, are just kind of two sides of the same coin. Yeah. It's both relational acts of care. They are our basis and our support, and they are our clarification and our resolve. And resolve often means like what we will be resolved to do and stick with. Resolve in English actually means to really loosen, to really loosen. To untie, to unbind. It's a wonderful word for this. And as far as practice goes, I'd like us to see if tomorrow we can use care as a practice. Say a bit more about how that can look, but we could take something like we have written up, you know, the five precepts. They're a practice. Teacher I like to listen to, Gregory Kramer, had some nice interactions with in the past, has often said that all of the Buddha's teachings are practices. All of them are practices. The five precepts are practices, not just like, oh yeah, I did that, took that. Really questioning, investigating harm that we can cause. Brahma-viharas, of course, practices. What we can bring into being. These qualities of kindness without expectation of anything in return. Compassion, that wish to soothe and ease the pains of this body, the pains of the world. but also the qualities to delight, to appreciate, to take joy in what is beautiful. These are all a kind of duty that we can take into our lives. And knowing when to step back from our interfering. Let the dust settle. Let what needs to unfold, unfold. Letting in, letting be, letting go. Just like when we don't scratch the itch, it self-liberates. So in a moment, I think we'll have a silent moment, but I hope that you feel for yourself that one of the best ways to see this path is as a path of causing less and less harm, of finding opportunities to be the kind of caring beings we wish to be, and help support less and less dukkha, and maybe eventually get mistaken for celestial magicians while we're walking down the road.